en mörk oändlig Ingmar.
Welcome to Views from the World Tree. On this week's show, we look at some interesting books, share our preferences for TV, and explore the world of action video games. And now, on with the show. Sorry, I had to try my voiceover voice. Did it work?
It sounded good to me.
In a world.
Yes? I see. Good news, everyone!
I'll go ahead and jump in on news. So, for reading, I picked up a new audiobook. Apparently, it was made into a movie at some point. But I was not aware of that until I saw the book and it said now a major motion picture. Anyway, it's called The Art of Racing in the Rain. It's kind of interesting. It was on the Kindle bestseller list, which is how I found it. It's by a guy named Garth Stein, and it's about it's told from the point of view of this dog. And it says, the book says, meet the dog who will show the world how to be human. It's described as a heart-wrenching but deeply funny and uplifting story of family, love, loyalty, and hope. And basically, there's this guy who's an amateur race car driver, hence the title, Racing in the Rain. And it's told from the point of view of his dog. And it's a story about him finding a girl, getting married, having a kid, and then his wife being diagnosed with brain cancer, and like his custody battle with his in-laws over his daughter. And it's just kind of like, it's told from, like I said, the point of the view of the dog, and it's kind of set up as a memoir. It opens with the dog being like really old and his owner's like taking him to the vet to get put down, which is really depressing way to start the book. But then the dog goes through and reminisces about, you know, when he was a puppy and got brought home and watching this guy like go through his life, watching his family grow up, and kind of all of the weird human like trials and difficulties, but through the eyes of a dog. So it's kind of weird, but seems good so far.
That sounds really good. I haven't heard of it before, and I don't know if it's something that I would have picked up before you said it. So you've got me intrigued enough to possibly check it out.
Yeah, it's I had never heard of it either. I literally pulled up the Kindle bestsellers because I was looking for a new book, and that's how I found it. So far, so good. And then as far as what I'm watching, so I picked up the movie called The Northman on iTunes and have been watching that. I'm just about to the end. It's been really good and very historically accurate. Not as kind of romanticized as like the Vikings TV show. It stars Alexander Skarsgård, Nicole Kidman, and I can't remember the name of the guy that plays the antagonist. But it tells the story of this young Viking prince who his father is murdered by his uncle when he's a young kid, and it follows his story as he like escapes and runs away and flees to Iceland. Kind of in pursuit of his uncle to try and avenge his father's death. So Don't want to give anything away, but it's pretty good. I liked it.
I keep seeing things on YouTube about that. A lot of people are kind of commenting on it and saying how good it is. So I haven't watched it yet. You said that it was on Apple Plus?
I just picked it up on on Apple TV, but on the iTunes store. So I just bought the digital copy.
Yeah, I'll have to. That's another one that's been on my list or on my radar for a little bit that I just haven't brought myself to watch yet. Kind of like the sequel to Vikings with Leif Erikson and all of that.
The Netflix one.
Yeah, I haven't brought myself to watch that one yet.
That one, I don't know. I didn't really care for that one, but it is what it is. This one of the, so I would say the three major Norse storytelling shows lately have been Vikings, which the History Channel did, Vikings Valhalla, which Netflix did. That's the Leif Erikson one. And then this one, The Northmen, I don't remember who directed this one, but anyway, but of the three, this one, I'm not going to lie, I really liked the History Channel Vikings. It was a lot of fun. It was, over the top, lots of really great drama and acting. It was definitely, like I said, kind of outlandish and romanticized, which is fine. This one though, this one scratches a different itch, I guess. It's very true to kind of the history that we know, and it's more of obviously it's a fictional tale, but it could almost be like a historical retelling of what could be real events. There's anytime there's anything mystical that happens, so there's a scene where Odin appears to the protagonist, and then he's in this state where he could be delirious, and that could explain the mysticism. And then when somebody else comes in, all they see are these two ravens. They do it in a way that it could be practical, or it could be kind of more out there mystical, just depending on how far into it you want to buy.
I do appreciate that. I guess with Vikings being based off of one of the sagas, a poetic poem, and this one being based off of, I'm guessing, historical text, considering you're saying it's a little bit more historical, maybe that's one of the things. I don't know.
It could be. Anyway.
I'll have to check it out. I think is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And then for other news, I saw a headline that there's a video game that's been in development called The Lord of the Rings Gollum, and apparently it's going to be released sometime in 2022. Looks pretty interesting, pretty fun. It's kind of you play as Gollum, and it's kind of like a Assassin's Creed type game where it's focused on stealth and that plays to some of Gollum's strengths as far as being sneaky and tricksy and all that. And there's even a mechanic, a core mechanic, where you make decisions as you progress through the game, and it either strengthens the Smeagol side of you or the Gollum side. And so, the further one way or the other you go, you unlock additional abilities. So, kind of like Star Wars The Old Republic, right? Where you've got the Sith and the Jedi.
Yeah. I haven't heard of this game yet. But it sounds like a lot of fun. I assume it's going to fill in a lot of the holes left from the whole Gollum arc.
Are there? It's supposedly it removed enough from the stories that it's not going to like retcon anything. But it's also close enough that, like, I don't know if the Tolkien estate has signed off on, yes, this is canon or not, but it, yeah, honestly, I don't know a whole lot about it. I hadn't heard much since they announced it until, this news story that came out when they announced that it was being released this year. So.
Nice. I haven't heard it. It sounds like you don't know much about it, but that sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I'm excited to try it. They say it's going to be released on, so it'll be cross-platform, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and even on the Nintendo Switch later on. So.
Excellent.
And then the other, only other bit of news, if you've been living under a rock and have not yet checked out Disney Plus, there's a new Disney Plus series, Obi-Wan, that the first episode is out. So I have not seen it yet.
I haven't either. sorry. I gave you that look because I looked at the show notes and went, wait a second. You're good.
Honestly, I had forgot that it was coming out until just before we recorded. I was flipping through the TV and saw that it was out, so decided to throw that in.
Oh, no. This is one that I've been excited for a while. Ewan McGregor's reprising his role as Obi-Wan. What's his face? Who played Anakin in the prequels?
Hayden Christensen.
Yes, Hayden Christensen is reprising his role as a fully corrupt Anakin, beginning of Darth Vader, and it's kind of like the in-between, the end of the prequels and the beginning of the original series, and so it's just super exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. So,
everybody that I know that has seen it has said good things. Twitter is upset because apparently the second episode breaks canon. But what show doesn't break canon with the diehard nerds? And yeah, I'm excited for this one. I'm going to nerd out probably tomorrow on it.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. That's all I had. So. And yeah, looking at the notes now, I see that I stole one of yours with the Obi-Wan thing. So,
bad. No worries. I there, so much as else has happened, so we're good. I've got enough news to share.
Sweet.
As far as this last week since we last talked, I've been reading a book called Contagious. And it was recommended to me on one of those sites where I kind of go and go, hey, I don't know how to market anything. Like, what do I do to do this? What do I do to do this? And so it was one of those reading list things. And the basic premise is looking at the internet and why certain things go viral, but other things don't. Like why kitten videos and infants go viral. Well, a lecturer that's discussing some groundbreaking science doesn't, type of thing. And so it's just an interesting look at that. He shared a lot on the beginning of Google and how Google became kind of the search engine of choice today. I don't know if you remember this, but they had an advertising guy that came in. He was a filmmaker and a digital artist. He wasn't a tech guy. And he looked at their marketing plan and basically said, no, this isn't going to sell anybody on using your search engine. Like, you have to tell a story. And so the advertisement starts with a search engine. Basically going into Google and saying, hey, how do I study abroad in France or something like that? And then it goes into another one, and you hear like the sounds of a French cafe behind. And it says, how do I ask a girl out in France, and things to do in Paris? And then it goes on and goes, where can I buy a ring? And so it's like this life story of this person using Google to find the love of his life, and it ends with them having a child, and just like made Google seem human, almost like you're asking a best friend rather than asking a computer algorithm how to find things. And so he was just breaking down that advertising and just talking about like the excitement of telling a story and like the excitement of discovery, and how the things that go truly viral are the things that that kind of show humanity in a different light. And so it's a fascinating read. I would definitely recommend it to anybody that wants to do anything in today's society, which is mostly on the internet. So
yeah, that is interesting. That it makes sense that it would be those things with the like the human connection, the emotional connection.
Yeah. Well, he did mention that infants and toddlers saying random stuff and cat videos will always go viral, just because like the cuteness factor trumps anything. Yeah, you put something cute in there, people are going to share it.
Makes sense.
Like, oh, look at this cat that is scared of a cucumber. It is funny. I will send it to everybody on my email list so that they can laugh with me.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I say that, those videos are amazing. If you want to get on my good side, email them to the show and I will watch every single one of them. Sorry, side note. So Adam had mentioned that Obi-Wan Kenobi came out this weekend. My father-in-law texted me today that Stranger Things Season 4 came out this weekend. So today after work, I sat on the couch and I started to rewatch Season 1 of Stranger Things, because I have to admit, after a two-year hiatus, I don't remember what happened in that show. I just remember that I really liked it.
Yeah, that was a good one. And I actually did not realize that that was this weekend. So I guess I know how I'm going to be spending my Memorial Day weekend.
I'm sorry. Maybe we can do a watch party and just watch them together. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah, excellent, excellent series. So I'm excited to see where they take it. I remember reading that since the actors have obviously gotten older, that this new season was supposed to be like older as well, like more dark and more gritty. So excited to see what that means.
I could see that. I forgot how young the actors were when you first started.
Yeah, they were tiny.
Like it's almost like when you go back and you rewatch the Harry Potter series and you look at Daniel Radcliffe and like all and all these actors that had, like, they're grown adults now, but you look at them at the very first Harry Potter going, oh my gosh, these kids were like 12 when they started this show.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, I guess the show did start when they were in middle school, so they could do a high school level, even though some of the actors are probably close to 20 now.
Probably, yeah. It's been a while ago.
Yeah. That's wild. So, yeah. So I'm excited about that one. The last bit of news that I was going to share is Obi-Wan Kenobi comes out. But, no, I guess since the time has come and gone, I can officially announce to the world and everybody that's listening
that I have finally left the school district. I am no longer teaching. So that is some news that I'm sharing. I'm excited for the next chapter where I go and finish up my undergrad and hopefully find something in wildlife management to do. But I am no longer an educator as of, 8 hours ago.
It's crazy. It's time flies, I guess. So I just hit my 10-year anniversary with my current employer, and I know you've been in education significantly longer than that, so.
Yeah. If I were to stick it out, it would have been 19 years at the beginning of next school year.
Wow.
So.
A long time.
18 years, yeah. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss most of the people, but I don't know. It got to the point where it was impacting my health in a negative way, and I just had to do something different. So,
well, supposedly that's the millennial thing to do, is not just change jobs at our age, but like change career fields. So,
yeah, I hear that. It's funny. I've got that weird being raised with like the boomer loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
I really should have left this job a long time ago, but I was loyal and didn't want to seem like ungrateful for everybody that put their neck out to hire me and like all of that. And once the wages started to stagnate, I probably should have cut back and tried something else, but I don't know. I'm glad I didn't. So I won't say it's completely boomer or Xer or millennial or any of that stuff. I just got fed up and didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my news for the week.
Cool.
That's our news for the week, I guess.
Well, guess we better jump into the main topic then.
Excuse me. Got a tickle in my throat. And what is our main topic this week?
So we are talking about action adventure games. Specifically video games. So, so when you suggested this topic last week, I had to do a bit of digging. And I was not entirely clear on what makes a game action adventure versus just action or just adventure. So I felt like that might be a good place to start, just so that everybody listening is kind of on the same page that we are.
No, that's perfect. I have to admit, I honestly do not know what makes a game action-adventure. I know that it shouldn't have a leveling system similar to like role-playing games, but that's about all I know.
So from what my research said, which I say research, really it's just Google and Wikipedia, but so action-adventure is a hybrid, which, I mean, obviously it's kind of self-explanatory. So it can include games that are also categorized under other genres. But really what it comes down to is, so pure adventure games they make a lot of use of situational problems for the player to solve, and they have like little to no action, very little combat, or if there is combat, it's either in like a mini game or it's very like turn-based and very slow. And then on the flip side, action games it's very real time. It challenges your reflexes, and it's like very based around not even necessarily combat, but just that real time reaction to what's happening on the screen.
Perfect. So adventures like Myst.
Mm-hmm.
Actions like Meteor.
Yeah, could be, yeah, Meteor, Call of Duty, all of that stuff. Or even like the, so like rhythm games, I think would technically fit under action. So like Beat Saber is a rhythm game that I like to play a lot on the, it's on the VR headset. And that one meets the definition based on this article, because it's all reactionary in real time. So,
all right.
So then an action adventure game, according to what this said, is something that kind of marries aspects from both. So it has like problem solving, but it also engages your reflexes, and there's like a real time component to it. So
I like that. For me personally, a good action adventure game has to have a good storyline. I feel like action games kind of throw you into the action without a lot of story. The adventure games are very story driven without a lot of action. So like a good action adventure has to have, it has to be story driven in my, well, I'm not an expert, in my opinion, has to be story driven and have like kind of reactionary skill challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when I was reading this article, there was, that was one of the things that it specifically called out, has to have, like you said, robust story. And part of that is having like multiple named characters that have like a backstory. So it's not just the player that's going through and reacting to stimuli, you know, you, whether it's through quests or cutscenes or whatever, there's backstory, there's rich character development.
Usually good world development too, if it doesn't take place in the world that we know. There's usually good backstory that defines the rules of the world that we're playing in.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I love about video games is it's a non-linear form of telling a story. And so I love games, especially in this genre, that have a, it's like watching a movie, but you get to play the main characters, and the movie lasts, in a modern day AAA title, anywhere from 60 to 120 hours.
That's a good way of looking at it. I don't really have a whole lot of examples of that, but yeah, I would agree. World building is important. Excuse me.
Well, cool. Now that we've defined what they are, and we've kind of shared some of the things that both you and I like about them, I guess when it comes to action games, what are your wishes? What do you wish the most out of your games?
For me, it's all about my level of engagement. And just how well the game can hold my attention and suck me into the game world. The more immersive and interesting it is, the more enjoyable it is, and the more I get out of it. So for me, it's all about that storytelling and the, you know, that emotional connection, I guess.
Perfect. I'll echo that. It's got to be story. The story's got to be good. And most of the RPGs I play are very text-heavy, where you read and you can kind of develop the characters in your own head. What I like about the action-adventure genre, especially in the modern age, is everything's fleshed out with good voice acting. So even though it's not like something that defines the genre or has to be there, I love the voice acting that we're seeing in video games right now. And this genre has always kind of excelled at trying to make them more voice acting, more artistically sound, more multi-dimensional type of thing.
Yeah, the voice acting and stuff is really cool that we're seeing a shift towards, as long as it's done well and not just for the sake of doing it. Like, I really love a game that has a lot of good voice acting, and even like good like cinematic cutscenes and stuff. But that's one of those things, for me at least, where if it's done poorly, it's almost worse than if it didn't have it at all. Like if the voice acting is just so incongruous with like what the character looks like and what I think they should sound like, it just completely breaks that immersion for me.
That's fair. At that point, you put the TV on mute and turn on subtitles.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah. Agreed. In the show notes, it says story elements. Kind of talk about those. So the question is, what story elements are common in action-adventure games? And I don't know if it's a story element, but I think the classic action-adventure game, at least in my opinion, is the Tomb Raider series type of thing, where you have a puzzle that you need to solve. You're usually trying to retrieve something, and it's usually you have kind of a bad guy pitted against a good guy type of thing. I feel like those are the most common elements. There are outliers, like always, but the outliers are usually very kind of parallel to it. Thinking of Grand Theft Auto, the first one that was in a 3D environment, Grand Theft Auto 3, you were playing as the protagonist I can't remember what he was trying to make money for, but he had a goal of making money so that he could save a family member or something like that. And so there's always an end goal, something that you're trying to capture at the end. Red Dead, you're trying to find the treasure. You're working with the feds trying to find the treasure at the end, while bringing down an old gangmate. Red Dead 2, I don't want to go too much into it because I know that's on both of our lists of the top five, but there's always an end goal, something unattainable that you have to work towards. Is it definitely a story driver in this genre?
Yeah, another thing that is common to a lot of my favorite action adventure games is just the just exploration in general, like whether that's, you know, having a big world map or setting off on, like, you know, in search of whatever treasure, artifact, just that whole process of like exploring the world is something that really helps to pull me in. It's something that I really enjoy, and it's kind of becoming a little bit more common with a lot of recent games trending towards like an open world concept. And I really love that that's the case. And I'm excited to see that trend continue, hopefully.
Yeah. For sure. Well, now that we've kind of laid out the boundaries, what are your top five? I guess I'm skipping ahead. Before we go into our top fives, what are some of the things that you don't like about action games? We both kind of mentioned the stories. You said the voice acting was something that you're not a big fan of sometimes, depending. But the genre, what is something that you do not enjoy about action adventure?
So I don't know that there's anything about the genre itself that I dislike, but there are a few like game mechanics or elements that are common in some action adventure games that I don't care for. And one of them is the roguelike or roguelite trend that's been popular recently. And I know a lot of people really love it and it's really popular, but it's just not for me. And it's that, in case anybody listening is not aware, it's the concept of the game is designed in a way that you are supposed to fail repeatedly. And then each time you fail and you go back and start over, whether it's at the beginning of a level or a puzzle or whatever, you get some type of increase in power or ability that makes it so that you can get a little bit farther the next time. And that's just something that drives me crazy. Like it definitely helps add a lot of replayability to a game. And if it's done right, it's fine. But unfortunately, it's also a way that some developers have chosen to make a game more replayable just at the expense of making it replayable. And they'll add these mechanics that kind of force you to fail just so that they don't have to make as much content, I guess, is what it feels like. So that would be one thing that I would say is definitely high on my dislike list.
I can agree with that. I like the roguelike games that where every life, you don't have multiple lives, and once you die, that story arc is done. So you go back and you play what could be a completely different game in a different level, different setting, with a brand new character with nothing held. I like those kind a lot more than the, hey, we're going to push you to the limit and make you fail. So like you, I'm not a big fan of forced failure mechanisms.
Yeah. What about you? What's another thing that you dislike about these games?
I don't like when the storytelling, when the adventure and the action is not balanced very well, and you end up in this super hard level. It happens every now and again where you have to combat your way through what feels like hundreds of enemies, and then you get to the cutscene at the end and it renders all the work that you did pointless. So I guess sometimes the writers are lazy, or the writers are not working with the level design team. And there's like a disconnect between level design and storytelling. So I see that every now and again, and that's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, that's definitely annoying to feel like all the effort that you put in doesn't have any bearing on the actual game world.
Yeah. So Yeah, that's really the only big hang up. Thinking about it, I love the open world. I love the storytelling. There's so much about this genre that I love. That if the game isn't unnecessarily hard or has broken plot lines, I will usually play it and enjoy it.
Cool.
So, anything else that kind of hangs up on those?
No, I don't think so.
Cool. Let's go into our list.
Okay.
What's your number five?
So for my number five, I put Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
So Red Dead Redemption 2 is kind of a Western action adventure developed by Rockstar Games. I want to say it's the third in the series, but I think it's a prequel to Red Dead Redemption. If I remember, it's been a long time since I've played this one.
Yeah. But, it's a prequel to the original, or well, yeah, a prequel to the storytelling Red Dead.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically your, this gritty, gritty Western. And I like that there's an open world aspect to it. There's also, so you are there in kind of the decline of the Wild West. I like that you have to survive like other rival gangs, but also there's, you're against the kind of the government forces, and it just kind of feels good sticking it to the man, I guess. But, so that was my number five. What about you? What did you have for your number five?
My number five was Far Cry 5.
Oh, that's fitting then.
I didn't realize that I chose that one as my number five until I just said it. Or that five was in the title. This one, it's the Far Cry series, you always play a government agent that's in to kind of take apart a guerrilla organization of some sort. And so you play kind of a super agent with access to technology and weapons and government resources with the goal of getting rid of kind of terror cells. In the fifth one, it takes place here in America. It's the first time that the series has been in America, up in Montana, and it follows your agent as you go in and you try to dismantle a very controlling cult that is using kind of brainwashing chemicals to create kind of an army of cult fanatics with the goal of taking over the entire valley. It's dark, it's gritty, it's scary. The storytelling, it really gets you. It's written so well that as you're sitting there and like every compound that you go into, there's the radio is controlled by the cult leaders, and it's like feeding you their ideas of the life, and you can kind of understand why people would be drawn to it. And so like, I don't know, the voice acting, the writing, everything is so well done that you just get so enveloped in the world. And yeah, I'll just kind of leave it at that. It's just one of those games.
That's cool. Speaks to it. I'm not sure why, but I don't think I've played this one. It's just one of those that I missed, I guess. Okay. Is it, do you know, it's not like a PlayStation exclusive or anything, is it?
No, it's a cross-platform. I think you can get it on Steam.
Okay.
I know it's on Xbox. It may be a Microsoft exclusive. It might just be on Steam and Xbox.
Okay. Yeah, that's not it then, because That would be the only other reason, because I don't have any PlayStation console. So,
yeah,
I'll have to put that one on my list.
Well, it's about 5-6 years old now, so you could probably get it for under 30.
Nice. Maybe it's on Game Pass.
Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe.
Well, let's go ahead and just keep going down the list then. So okay. For number 4, I have Assassin's Creed Valhalla. More broadly, just I guess I would put the Assassin's Creed series here, but since we're talking about action adventure, I feel like Valhalla fits really well because of the open world concept. So the Assassin's Creed series, if anybody is unaware, centers around this ancient brotherhood of assassins. There are multiple games in the series set in at different periods throughout history. There's one in ancient Rome. There's one that's during the pirate age. There's one that's during the Templar age. It's, you know, kind of all throughout history. This one obviously is during the Viking age, specifically when the Vikings came to, modern day, like England and Ireland. And you play as the protagonist, Ivor, and you can either choose to play male or female. And depending on where you're at in the story, you could be over in Scandinavia, you could be in, you know, ancient UK, you could be in Ireland. I think that technically was a DLC. And then parts of it you also play in Asgard, in the mythical realm of Asgard. So you get to meet up with the different Aesir. And this one's pretty cool because, again, the open world concept, but there was a lot of historical work that went into this one. And I know that that's something they tried for with others, but there's a lot of the stories and the sagas that, you know, that I read in my youth that are really well adapted to this, to the game. One of my favorite stories is from Norse legend, is when they are trying to get a wall built, and they are working with one of the Jotun to build a wall, and they try and trick him into, I don't want to give too much away from the game, but he makes a deal to marry somebody, and they try and like trick him by, you know, pulling the fast one on him. And it's just really cool because it's all there and you get to play through all of these amazing stories that I remember reading. So that one is my number 4.
That is definitely a good one. I played at least through half of the game before I kind of put it away for a little bit. So I need to go back and finish it. But that one definitely makes my honorable mention just because I love that period of history. I love the stories, like you said. The assassin targets, I feel like there was a little bit of a disconnect and they could have done a little bit better on that. But other than that, that's really the only complaints I have. So I think it's good.
Yeah, that aspect of it definitely took a backseat to the storytelling and the world building. So yeah. I also think this one came out at a really good time because it came out kind of around the same time as, was it like the last season of the Vikings show? Anyway, mm-hmm. And at one point you actually get to play through and you get to meet the sons of Ragnar. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, good timing on their part. Very cool.
What have you got for number four?
My number four is the Tomb Raider relaunch trilogy. Starts with the Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider, and then Shadow of the Tomb Raider. And I chose the trilogy. I had a hard time choosing between the three games because they're all very good in different ways. But it's just such a well-made game. The acting's phenomenal. The storytelling's phenomenal. If you've played the original ones, you've seen Lara Croft as an adult. She's a billionaire, kind of a female Indiana Jones, goes around and kind of unlocks the mysteries of the universe through her archaeology. In the prequels, she's a college student trying to finish her degree in archaeology, armed with her father's journal, and she's out looking for a lost civilization. A storm breaks. She gets shipwrecked. She's trying to find her crew, her friends, and also finds evidence of a lost civilization, as well as evidence of kind of a new cult of personality around this lost civilization. And so it kind of puts you into a survival mode where you have to survive the elements of being shipwrecked, marooned on a deserted island. But you also have the puzzle solving of having to figure out what's going on. You have the dungeon delving of the different platforming levels, as well as how to manipulate the environment to make sure that you're able to solve the puzzle and get out alive, type of thing. And so it just combines everything around it. And it would have ranked a lot higher if it wasn't also... Square had, I think it's Square.
Square Enix?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know they did the newest one.
Yeah. They were coming out with new technology, and it turned into a playground for developers. And so there's points of the game where the gameplay doesn't match what's happening just because they're trying to figure out new ways to create the gameplay. And so that's the one complaint I have and the only reason why it's not ranked higher. But yeah, story, it's phenomenal. Acting, it's phenomenal. Graphics, oh my gosh, you feel like you're in it. There's one point where Lara falls off a ledge and lands on a piece of rebar that goes through her oblique muscle, and just the feeling of the fall, like I can feel my stomach falling with her, and then seeing her get impaled on a piece of rebar makes me want to throw up almost every time that I do it. It's so lifelike, it's almost scary. So
nice. I do own Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Shadow of the Tomb Raider? Yeah. Other than that, though, I have not played any of these since like the very early ones, with the very low polygon Lara Croft. And I picked this one up when I got my new MacBook because it was one of the few AAA games that has native support for the Apple Silicon, and so it. Like it was almost a kind of a benchmark thing because it runs like amazingly well on my MacBook Pro. And so it's just very pretty to look at.
Yeah.
But I haven't put a lot of time into this one yet, unfortunately, but I would agree that this one is definitely, and really the Tomb Raider series is kind of that classic action adventure, jumping through dungeons, solving puzzles. It definitely hits all the boxes. So
I always liked the Tomb Raider games because it took ideas from the early platforming games such as Mario, Bubble Bobble, and it put them into a 3D environment. And I always like that throwback to the originals.
Yeah. So that kind of segues into my number three, which is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. So this game is actually really similar as far as mechanics to the Tomb Raider series, and it also ticks a lot of the boxes for action-adventure games. This one has numerous puzzles to solve. You're also fighting bad guys. There's platforming. There's really everything. There's, with the Majora's Mask one specifically, there's like another layer to the puzzles because the whole game takes place over the same 3 days. So maybe I should back up a little bit. So in Majora's Mask, the antagonist, Skull Kid, is trying to make the moon crash into the earth and destroy everything. And you have 3 days to stop him. You obviously are not going to be able to accomplish that in 3 days. So you also have this special magical ocarina with different songs that you can play to speed up, slow down, and rewind time. And so, in addition to all of the like the dungeon puzzles and different things, there's that additional layer of certain sequences and certain events only take place on certain days or certain times of the day. So in addition to the main storyline, it was one of the earliest games that I remember playing where there was a lot of side quests and things to collect on the side. In this case, there's a lot of different masks that you can collect through side quests that give you different abilities, which are totally optional, to be honest, because you can beat the main storyline without doing any of that. But this one was also probably the first game, so this was on Nintendo 64, the first game where I, well, no, not the first one, one of the earliest games where I had a notebook that accompanied it, where I would have to like draw out dungeon maps on graph paper and write down like notes and stuff about the puzzles. And it was a blast. It was back in that earlier age before you could just jump on the internet and look up the solution to puzzles. It was before cheat codes, or not cheat codes, but before, you know, you could like mod games to make things easier. It was just a ton of fun.
This one is another honorable mention for me because of everything that you said. The thing about that I did not like about this one, the story was very, very dark. It was,
it was
a hard story to kind of live through, with everything that was happening in my life at the time that I played it. I think if I played it or tried to replay it now, I would probably get more joy out of it than I did back then. But yeah, the game mechanically, this one is phenomenal. So, yeah, cool. Good choice on number three.
Yeah.
My number three, we've already talked about a little bit. Red Dead Redemption 2 is my number three. So Adam kind of gave a synopsis. The things that I love about this game, side quests, I love the exploration. If you see a mountain, you can go up the mountain if you want. Just be forewarned that if you go up the mountain and you don't have a blanket or something warm, you might freeze to death type of thing. It's got the survival aspect of it. It's got hunting and fishing. You can go hunting and fishing all over. You can interact with almost anybody in there, however you want to do it. There's a storyline that I loved where you go into the Game World's version of New Orleans. And so you're out in the countryside and you're riding horses and you're doing all that, and you get deep south and all of a sudden you're in New Orleans and you see trolley cars and cobbled streets, and the horse, it doesn't quite fit. Like, people kind of look at you, the NPCs look at you as you're riding through the town, like, what is this fool doing on horseback? There's much more better ways to make it around town without dirtying your clothes type of thing. And just as Adam had said earlier, the old ways of the West dying away as new technology comes in, like, you definitely feel it during that point of the arc. That's, I don't want to give it away, if you, in case you've been living under a rock and don't know how it ends, or in case you still want to play it, but this, the arc when you're in the New Orleans area is when the story, you start to understand where the game is going to end, and it's got some very emotional parts to that part of the story that just is why I'd rank it so high, is because you learn to love the main character, and then at this point you're so attached to him when the plot twist comes in and you realize something. So without giving it away, that part's awesome.
Yeah, agreed. It is awesome. So. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add that I didn't already mention about this one.
Yeah.
Definitely makes the list.
Yeah. I mean, it's in both of our top fives. And I would consider that, for you, dear listeners, pretty good, because we don't tend to agree on a lot of video games. So,
yeah. Excuse me. All right. So for my number two, I don't know if this breaks the rules. I still consider this an action adventure game. It definitely is. It skirts the line of action RPG, but I think it still fits. So my number two is The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, which needs no introduction, but I'll give one anyway. So this is a cross-platform. I think it's on everything. Gritty, like medieval high fantasy, dragons, sword and sorcery, magic, werewolves, super open world, similar to, like you were saying, with Red Dead. If you want to climb the mountain, go for it. Tons of side quests, and that's kind of a thing with most of the Elder Scrolls games. Like, playing through Skyrim can take as little as an hour potentially for you to go and kill the end boss, or it can take, you know, months if you go and go to all the different map locations and complete all the side quests and talk to all the different people. And this one, since it gets into a little bit of that RPG territory, there's definitely a little bit of the, like, talent tree where you can go more of, like, the, you know, the sword hack and slash type character. You can lean more towards sorcery and learning different spells. But this one, I think I've purchased this game like three different times on different platforms and probably have hundreds of hours across those platforms. So,
yeah.
I'm assuming that you've No, you're good. I'm assuming that you've played this one. So, what's been your experience with it?
All right. This is probably my favorite game that I own. I've bought it on my Xbox and I bought it on my PC. I love the modding community on this. I love that there's a lot of replay value to it. I love that the skill tree is super fleshed out. Yeah, I think it deserves to be on your list. I didn't have it on mine because I know in the future we're going to do an RPG show, and it's definitely on that list for me.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this is by far one of my all-time favorite games. It just hits everything. Story rich. Interactions with NPCs are amazing. The crime and punishment system's fun. It's one of the few games where you can do whatever you want, but there's consequences for whatever you want to do.
Yeah, true.
So,
all right.
Yeah. I guess that brings me to my number two. Another Nintendo 64 game, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. This came out right when I entered high school, I feel like. Might have been middle school, but I think it was right around ninth grade when it came out for me. And it was one of the first games that that me and my friends at school at lunch would talk about. Oh, how did you get past this part of the story? How did you get past the horse race? How did you get past fight Ganon? Like, do you have any tips for this? And so it was like the first game that I really had to collaborate with people to figure out, kind of like you with the Majora's mm-hmm. Mask, drawing out the dungeons and stuff. And it has such a nostalgic, like, happiness surrounding it that I will always put this towards the top. One of my favorite mechanics is with the Ocarina of Time. I can't remember exactly when, but you learn a song where you can move forward in time. So you play as a young pre-adolescent main character for half the game, but the other half of the game you're playing as a mid-20-year-old main character. And so you kind of see how your actions as a kid influence how the game turns out, and you can switch between end of the game, like old Link and young Link, as much as you want. And it just had a fun mechanic. It's one of the first games I remember that had an actual day-night cycle, where you didn't want to be caught outside after dark, because that's when all the monsters came out, until you could fight them off. And it was just, I think it was so groundbreaking, it deserved all the awards that it got and all the nostalgia for it. And so it's definitely my number two, just because it was phenomenal.
Nice. I think, so hearing you talk about this one, I think we've come to the the root of why this one is in your top five and Majora's Mask is in my top five. And that's because, so when Ocarina of Time came out, I would have been in like seventh or eighth grade. And when Majora's Mask came out, I was in like ninth or 10th grade. And so I had that same experience, you know, talking over strategy with my friends at lunch and stuff. And at, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess what we're taking from this is the Legend of Zelda games are definitely high on the list in multiple different spots. So,
yes. Before we do our number ones, any honorable mentions from you?
I don't know. There's, I mean, I've played so many games over the years, and I mean, all of them obviously had some aspect that I enjoyed. Otherwise, I wouldn't have played them. But I can't really pick like one over the others. So I think I'm just going to stick with my five, I guess.
All right. I'm going to throw an honorable mention from my list to Grand Theft Auto 5. I like the way that you can switch between characters on that and the integration of Grand Theft Auto Online with the game world. It's really kind of a cool mechanic. And then Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is definitely an honorable mention for me for a lot of the same reasons that we talked about the other Legend of Zelda games. So, sorry.
No, it's all good. I guess I do have one honorable mention that I'll throw out, and that is to Adventure, the game Adventure. So this was honestly, I think it predates me, but yeah, 1980. So it predates me by a couple of years. But I have gone back and played this one. It's on the Atari. This game really like helped launch not only a genre, but it helped define the culture around like adventure games and puzzles, and even had the first video game Easter egg, like so many different things. So this one definitely, I think, deserves an honorable mention on my list.
That's a good one.
So. All right, with that, the number ones. So
nervous.
My number one is your honorable mention, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. This game, I cannot say enough good things about it. Is such a genre defining mechanic reimagining, just breathtaking in every way, in every sense of the world, sorry, in every sense of the word. It's a Legend of Zelda game. It's open world. It hits on nostalgia from all of the previous games. It introduces new and exciting mechanics. It broke all kinds of records when it came out. Honestly, it's the reason that I bought a Nintendo Switch. And then my wife and I enjoyed this one so much that we had to buy a second Switch so that we wouldn't have to fight over the first one. And yeah, I love everything about this game. I have put hundreds of hours into it. Probably in my top three or four most played games, which is saying a lot considering it's only been out for 5 years. So I think that's about all I've got to say about it. Cause if I keep going, I'll talk about it for the next hour.
That one was definitely good. Incredibly powerful story and graphics for a cartridge. If you haven't played on the Switch, their game cartridges. They brought back the cartridge, kind of floppy disk style technology. So their games tend to be a little bit lighter graphically. And this one, they used what many AAA developers would see as a disadvantage, and they turned it into a beautiful way to showcase the power of story. So the world is just phenomenal, looks almost hand-drawn, like old-style cartoon. And I love it. I kind of want to add it to my top five. I'm not going to change the numbers, but there is a reason why it made my honorable mention. So.
Yeah, as far as franchises, Legend of Zelda is probably in my top two or three. And of all of them, this one is my favorite Legend of Zelda game. So.
Excellent. That brings me to my number one action-adventure game. This is one that is probably going to be controversial. You're either going to love me or hate me for doing this one. But it is the 2002 video game of Spider-Man. This one was released in conjunction with the movies. It has small voiceovers by Tobey Maguire. The story isn't the greatest, but this is one of those games where the gameplay was so much fun. It's the first game that I can think of that took place in an actual real city, where you could, as Spider-Man, you could go out to the Statue of Liberty and you could swing off of the torch with your spider web. The open world explorability, running into Central Park and realizing that you were at a disadvantage because you were on the ground. So if anything bad happened there, you were kind of screwed. It was just, I think the scope of the world, the fact that you were able to explore a real place. When this game had come out, I had never been to New York City before. And so it was fun to see the world through a recreated portion of the island of Manhattan. So I think nostalgia is why I ranked it number one. But I pulled up the Wikipedia page not too long ago, and I was kind of looking at it, and it's got a fan rating, a Metacritic rating in the low 80s, which means I think a lot of other people actually kind of enjoyed it too. So yeah, Spider-Man 2002 version.
I'll have to be honest, I have not played this one, and don't really remember hearing much about it, so there's not really a whole lot I can add to this one.
That's all right. Yep. I feel like I may have won the list just because I have played two games that you missed.
Yeah, there you go.
And you're a bigger gamer than I am, so.
Yeah, apparently I need to broaden my horizons a little bit. Rather than just sinking hundreds of hours into the same ones. But
super fun. I like this episode. Brings us to mindfulness. Adam, do you want to take this one?
Sure. So we don't really have a specific quote or passage or anything to share. So we just wanted to acknowledge that this time last few weeks have been very confusing for many, very hard to bear for many more, with two mass shootings in two consecutive weeks. We just wanted to take a moment and share our grief for those affected and say some fervent prayers, hoping that these type of events do not continue here in the United States. So
Yep. I don't want to have too much dead air, but it's been kind of hard to see such senseless points of violence and disrespect of life occurring. And it feels like it's happening a lot. And I just know that we're thinking of everybody that's been impacted.
Yep.
Well, on a lighter note, you all should join us next week as we kind of explore what is happening at the edge of our planet. Yes, you heard me right. The edge of our planet. Because we're deep diving into the world of flat earthers. We're going to try to figure out, do they really know the truth? Or are they just a bunch of people that deny science? We'll see you next week.
See you then.